151 years in the making. This is the First in Football Podcast, your look at Princeton Tigers football. Here's your host, Cody Kruschel.
This is the First in Football Podcast. We are back at it this fall, despite the fact that we won't have a 2020 football season at Princeton or in the Ivy League. We'll still be here with new episodes each Thursday during what would have been the season. In a normal year, we'd be here recapping training camp as the Tigers got set to head down to Lexington, Virginia, originally scheduled to open the season this Saturday at VMI. So no game to talk about, but still a lot to discuss on today's show. We'll catch up with head coach Bob Cerace. We'll go back to the abrupt end to spring practice. We'll talk about how him and his staff have been managing a fall without game competition and keeping connected to the players on their team. We'll break down some of the new additions to the coaching staff and spotlight the program's recent NFL success, which has carried over this fall with four players on NFL active rosters or practice squads. We won't have Bob on every week, but that'll give us a chance to talk to some of the assistant coaches and other folks around the program, and the plan is to have a coach, a player, and an alum on the show each week. On today's show, we'll welcome Carson Bobo, a junior tight end who had a breakout campaign in 2019, and we'll check in with John Lovett, fresh off his NFL regular season debut with the Green Bay Packers. Plenty to talk about, but first, let's get into it with Princeton's 11th-year head coach, a four-time Ivy League champion, one as a player, three times as Princeton's head coach, a four-time finalist for National Coach of the Year. Here's Bob Cerace. Coach, I guess, first off, good to catch up with you. Kind of bummed that we can't actually be in the same place here on campus, but I mean, what's this fall been like for you? I mean, obviously, you guys wouldn't open up until this Saturday, but a much different what would have been your opening game week.
Yeah, I think that coaches in general, our staff at least, and the guys I've worked with and people I've worked with in the past, we're people. You know, we like people. We like being around people. You know, you're down in the basement. I'm on the, you know, second floor of Jadwin, and we're not together. And you miss the camaraderie. You miss the in-person. You miss the locker room, the things, the bonding that you do that you get out of sports. And then obviously you miss the competition. And that'll hit us this week. The fact that, you know, the game's scheduled for Saturday and we're not on the bus trip and playing an opponent.
Let's, start on the home front. I know your daughter's still going through homeschooling. Your daughter, Allison, your son, AJ, had his first in-person day of high school earlier this week on Monday. How big of a role have you taken on in that hybrid learning environment?
Yeah, I'm fortunate because my kids are older and, you know, they've been through it and everything else. And, you know, I'm going to say all the right things because my wife has been at the head of bringing PDS back to school. So they're slowly bringing it in, you know, step by step. But they've been amazing. Like, my wife puts in 16-hour days every day to do it and has shown you can do it safely. You know, my son's a rising freshman and he's going through all the things that freshmen go through. But the great thing is, Cody, my daughter got her driver's license about a month ago. And man, the anxiety you go through as a dad when that daughter is driving by herself, I haven't gotten over that yet, but I will at some point.
I want to go back to – let's go back to March. You had one spring practice, Saturday, March 7th, and then early the following week, the Ivy League canceled all of spring athletics. Sort of walk us through that week. What happened – what was the feeling going into that first practice, and then what was sort of the fallout after you knew that you weren't going to be on the field with your guys the rest of the spring?
Yeah, you know, it's hard. You know, you love being around everybody, and – one of my wife's classmates who's married to one of her roommates, a guy named Josh Marshall, I follow him closely on Twitter. I probably every day I look him up. You know, he was talking about what was going to happen, and he's almost always right on things like this. And I said to the staff before that first practice, Monday, Tuesday, I'm going to spend time for an alternate plan because we may be sent home and we may not see the guys the rest of the semester. You guys, here's the practice plan. You guys get it ready. And Tuesday afternoon, they made the decision to, send everybody home and cancel spring ball and the spring athletics. basketball tournament. It was just really a tough time, but it certainly proved to be the right decision when Wednesday night Rudy Gobert test positive, and the world changed, at least our country changed.
So obviously you want to be on the field, but I'm sure pretty quickly your mindset changed. Okay, we've got all these kids and they've got some decisions to make and things that they're trying to navigate. You look at a tennis or a golf program, you might have 8 to 10 kids. Basketball, you've got 15 to 20. Lacrosse might have 30. You and your staff have 100 plus student athletes that you're responsible for. How did that process work? I mean, how do you make sure that each of those kids is in a good spot and you're being the resource that you have to be and the resource that you can be?
Yeah, well, we talk about leadership, and Molly, stresses that every meeting we have. And we talk about our team, and not only our football team, but our team of coaches and staff and professionals and leaders, and our assistant coaches who are exceptional. They put together a plan for the guys to get better through this time. And then we had a team meeting, our last team meeting, last time I've seen them. And, to have somebody of the quality of Jason Gallucci talk about what they were going to be doing the next 2 months, to have a Hall of Fame trainer in Charlie Thompson talk about what this means. And then I just stressed responsibility, to take this seriously. We weren't even at the point of social distancing and masks. We were at the very entry level, and I was trying to research what I should be saying to them. And the big thing was responsibility and being mature, and things that when I was 18 to 22, I failed often, and hopefully they would learn from maybe lessons that myself, my friends didn't succeed all the time at. But in a crisis, to stress their responsibility as leaders in their communities, and they stepped up.
This obviously affects the kids that are on campus, the kids that have been enrolled, and then, you're still trying to go through the recruiting process. So your fall season's canceled. We've seen articles from other sports where there's student athletes taking the year off, taking that gap year. You can't have your camps on campus. You can't have prospective student athletes visit campus, and Princeton's campus is a pretty big draw along with this program. How's recruiting changed for you and your staff?
Yeah, well, the things you stress in recruiting, excellence at Princeton at everything. Yesterday, U.S. News and World Report, which is the gold standard of rating colleges, this is a decade of being the number one school in the country. So excellence in our campus, excellence in the people, excellence on the sports fields, and everything. But then the second part is the people. And then the third part is the beauty when you walk through the campus. And we miss that in person. But as a leader, you can't just sit around and woe is me. Like, that just doesn't work in football. It doesn't work in athletics. You have to find solutions. And being with a trusted group of coaches and others, we found ways to build relationships. Zoom's one of them. Constant building of relationships, the constant communication with our recruits, so we can overcome some of the challenges and get them to know us and get them to know excellence and what Princeton's about. And it's not the way we've done it in the past. It's not the way we prefer. It's where we are. And somebody downs a punt at the one, I can't sit as a coach, woe is me, blah, blah, blah. No, get our backed up offense, get our plan, let's drive the ball, let's see if we can go 99 yards and score. And that's what we're doing, and we're taking this as a challenge.
I'm sure it's not entirely uncommon to sit back this past weekend and watch college football, because the Ivy League does start a couple of weeks after a lot of the other conferences. But sort of interested in your mindset as you're watching these games and you look at it. I mean, is there this FOMO, this fear of missing out, where we'd love to be out there, or is there a little bit of relief? You look at Texas Tech and you have 75 of those kids test positive. And I think, Virginia Tech, they canceled that game out of precaution the week of. I mean, is part of it, you want to be out there, but then part of it also, maybe we did make the right decision from a health standpoint, and you're just happy you don't have to deal with this and make a lot of these tough decisions?
Yeah, I mean, I got a Princeton degree, but I'm not an immunologist. I'm not an epidemiologist. I'm not a school president. and I'm not a politician. So let those people do their jobs. And, you know, I just know we need to support our players. Saturday after our practice, all the seniors come over our house and spend time and we bond. And it's something that when I was in college, we used to go over an alum's house and do the same thing. That's not legal anymore. So we have them come over my house and we get together. Those are the things that you miss. And when it pops up on my phone, on my calendar, because I plug those things in about a year in advance, I'm like, oh man, we would have the seniors and their parents over today. But yeah, you know, you miss the competition, but every second I waste on things I can't control, I'm not doing my best to support our players, support our coaches, and to, you know, show recruits about Princeton. And yeah, my son's playing high school football. They're playing in New Jersey. He's practicing in New Jersey. So, you know, everybody's making different decisions, and you just hope that they're done safely. They're done the best they can be. The better it goes, right? The better it goes with schools coming back and programs coming back, the better that testing and vaccines come, the better chance that we have students in the spring.
Now, Princeton this fall sort of would have been doing the military academy tour. You would have been getting ready for the opener down in Virginia at VMI this weekend. And then week four would have been interesting. I think the only team that was on your original schedule that's still playing this fall is Army. It's a 2-0 Army team. They're nationally ranked. You guys would have gone up there week four, so October 10th up to West Point, which is a really unique setup. And you know, based on the success your team's had, 18-2 the last 2 years, and how you're built and the style of play that the Black Knights run, man, you know, you look at it, a nationally ranked FBS team against an FCS Ivy League team, you guys would have had a shot.
Yeah, well, you know, you have a shot against anybody. You could tell me that the Kansas City Chiefs were coming in, and on Friday before the game, I would – on Sunday, I tell you, oh my God, they do this, they do that. This Mahomes guy, this, you know, Kelsey, this. But by Friday, we'd have a plan, and I believe in the plan that way. So I just, when they called and offered the opportunity to play, and Anthony Archibald came down, we jumped at it because as a competitor, you want that challenge. And, you know, just not only the challenge, but to compete against a school that, these guys are going to serve our country. These guys are going to protect our freedoms. This is what it's all about. And so, you know, have the opportunity to do that against a team that is always terrific. You know, it would have been in my 10 years, I don't remember a non-conference game having so much enthusiasm from our alumni. And this game had that.
I want to take a look at your coaching staff and some of the guys that are back and some of the newcomers. There was a little bit of turnover over the past 7 or 8 months. Steve Urbitt back, Mike Willis, Mike Mendenhall, Mark Rosenbaum, Brian Flynn, Mike Weick. So you've got a pretty good contingent back, and that foundation's there. Andy Orrick went up to Rutgers. He joined Greg Schiano's staff. He was the offensive coordinator at Princeton last year, now the offensive line coach for the Scarlet Knights. Mike Willis takes on a new role in addition to coaching the tight ends. He's your new offensive coordinator. And that sort of continues that tradition of promoting from within, especially at that offensive coordinator spot. Mike's been an Ivy League champion as a player. He's an Ivy League champion as a coach. And when you guys get back out on the field, he'll have his chance to put his stamp on this offense. Why was Mike sort of the natural fit to take over for Andy there?
Yeah, and it's the same question when Sean took over from James and when Andy took over for Sean. You know, you learn from studying some of these historic coaches and, you know, studying what they do in New England. And New England has kept a lot of continuity in how they did things. And what they do is they give their young coaches, assistant coaches, new coaches responsibilities. And every time I gave Sean Gleason something, he excelled at it. So I gave him more responsibility. And as he went up the ranks, you know, I was fully confident. It was the same with Andy. Mike came here as an intern. He had played for us. Every project I gave him, it was done incredibly detailed and exceptionally well. And then he became a part-time coach. Everything we gave him, incredibly detailed, exceptionally done. Then he became a position coach, same thing. Then he became recruiting coordinator, number one class in the country. And he's a great guy. He called plays in JV games, just had a great knack for how to call games. So when guys have been with me and have earned that trust, you know, it's a great opportunity to do that. And, you know, I'm excited. I think the players are excited. And, you know, he's done a terrific job so far.
On the other side of the football, a guy who hasn't necessarily been with you but has familiarity with the program, your new defensive backs coach, E.J. Henderson, takes over from Marvin Clesidor, who made the jump to the FBS with Western Michigan, where he'll coach their cornerbacks. E.J. back at Princeton. He was an assistant here. It was the 3 years before you were hired in 2010, right?
No, he was here my first year.
Or was
year,
he here so, your first year?
You know, I was able to retain Steve Herbert and E.J. when I came here. And E.J. was exceptional and then was able to move on to a full-time role somewhere else. And I admired what he did with the defensive backs at Cornell. I thought it was just outstanding. I know he and his wife loved this area from when they were here before. So when Kless was just outstanding, and you know, when you go from Jimmy Salgado, who's now dominating, you know, everything, and he's just a great coach, great person, crushing it in the NFL. Kless was the same way, going to crush it at Western Michigan. You need to find somebody of that quality. And I thought the problems EJ presented at Cornell, that was the hardest we had. That was the most confusing we had. And I think he has a great rapport with the players. And I'm just so excited for him to rejoin us.
And you guys hired him, the day before spring practice? Interesting week for him and his family.
Yeah, and he's got four young children. They're remote. And, you know, nothing rattles EJ. He's the most poised person. His kids are, you know, trying to get on Zoom remote learning, and they got passwords, and he's got young ones. So it's a lot more challenging. He's trying to learn our players. He's building relationships with our own guys. He's killing it recruiting. He's just an outstanding recruiter. And, you know, it's nice when you build friendships throughout coaching, and when you're able to build a friendship with somebody who's an exceptional coach, it's just, you know, terrific to have somebody of his quality on our staff.
Two more full-time additions to the staff. Your new running backs coach, Brandon Cuevas, takes over for Jamel Matunga, who is also part of that staff up at Rutgers. Just like Jamel, Brandon comes from Lehigh. He coached the running backs in 2018, the tight ends in 2019. Came from the same, played in the same Division III conference as Jamel. Brandon Cuevas, tell us about your new running backs coach.
Yeah, well, you know, again, relationships help. And he and Mark Rosenbaum are roommates in college. And he also coached on a staff with Mike White. And, you know, he's gotten to know us through the years. So, you know, you start with that small relationship, but that leads to, you know, this guy's a really good coach. He's done some really exceptional things in his career. Everybody that knows him loves him. You get great recommendations on him. And then you bring him in to interview, and you're left, this guy's the right fit. This guy fits us. He's perfect for what we want to do, what we want to accomplish. So, you know, I'm really excited. And again, you know, he's filling big shoes. Jamel was just an exceptional coach in person, and you know, Coach Gleason before that, Coach Arick was the running back coach before that, and EJ was the one who started at running backs. He was a running back coach when he was here. So, man, the history of that position, you know, you better hire somebody that has tremendous ability and ability to push players and to also support them, and that's Coach Cuevas.
Andy Orick also coached your offensive line. Chris Zarkowski takes over that role as the position coach. He played at New Hampshire. He started his coaching career at New Hampshire. Stops the past couple of years at Brown and Lehigh.
Yeah, this is the fun one for me because that's my area where I played at Princeton. It's the area I coached professionally in the NFL. You know, with Eddie Morrissey, who I've known since he GA'd with my brother, you know, 20 years before when I hired him. And then Andy, who Coach Arick, you know, Andy Arick had grown up in our system, you know, to get some new thoughts, new ideas for me to grow was important. And, you know, the first call I make on any offensive line position is Paul Alexander. Paul's maybe the greatest, if not the greatest, one of the top three great O-line coaches in NFL the past 30 years. And, you know, I asked Paul, and the first name he says is Czar. He says, this is the guy. And then a couple other people I call, you got to talk to Czar. And I just kept hearing his name. And so I was really excited to interview him. And I thought that there's a mesh of doing some things that we've done. And he and Paul Alexander, who is my mentor, had built this great relationship. So he understands some of my pet peeves and things that I want. But then he's brought some new ideas and some new ways to do things. And in the short time he's been here, I feel like the offensive line is – that group has to bond. You know, offensive linemen, you know, Cody, when somebody scores a touchdown, you're talking about the guy who had the touchdown, the interception, threw the ball, did all those things. The only time you call an offensive lineman out is when they make a mistake, right? So that group, all they got's each other. And to bond and to do that. And Czar is just like Andy, just like Eddie, these great O-line coaches we've had. He's got this way of getting these guys to be together and to enjoy themselves. And I'm kind of fired up because I feel like I've learned things over the past 7 months with him, which is good for me.
How long did it take you, as a center at Princeton, an all-conference center, and then coaching the offensive line in the NFL? Like, how long did it take you to sort of separate yourself from that group as a position group? You know, you're the head coach, you're in charge of all the positions, you know, or are you still a little bit, you know, subconsciously or not more invested in that offensive line group? I mean, you hear, if you're a major league catcher and your manager's Mike Socha or Mike Matheny, like, there's a little bit more of a spotlight. You were an offensive lineman. Have you been able to separate yourself, or do you still keep a little extra closer eye on that group in practice?
Yeah, well, you're coaching the team. You're coaching the coaches. So there is a little bit of whatever you want to call it, CEO. There's a little bit, and I don't want people looking over their shoulders, but I also know there's times in practice I'm going to be with the DBs, the linebackers, the D-line, the running backs, the receivers. I'm going to make my way around and watch each group. And there's specific times when I'm with the O-line. And in the individual periods. And when they're doing one-on-ones or they're doing specific drills in the run game or pass game, I can add value. And if I can add value and work together with, you know, Eddie Morrissey or Andy Art, but it's also, I've hired exceptional coaches. I don't need to babysit. Like, I'm not hiring somebody so I can babysit them. I'm hiring an expert so they can coach them. So I think we found that proper balance, certainly with the careers that our assistant coaches have gone on to the NFL or Power Five football and the ability for them to grow. You know, it shows I'm not just a babysitter, but yeah, we have standards. We meet those standards. And, you know, if I can lend something to help a guy out in his pass set or in his hands or in how he does things, you know, we're going to work together. And like anything else, that's what it's all about, is being a team and working together.
Speaking of the NFL, I don't know that there's a program at any level in college football that has as many tight ends in the NFL right now as Princeton. And most of these guys didn't actually play tight end here on campus. Steven Carlson with the Browns, John Lovett with the Packers, two of your guys that are on active NFL rosters, both saw game action. John Lovett, who we'll talk to later on in this First in Football podcast, making his NFL regular season debut. What does it mean to you to see guys playing on Sunday and guys, you know, working their way and earning their spots and overcoming adversity and really representing this program well?
Well, you know, one thing, when I, you know, 1986, I'm watching Princeton basketball, 1987, 1989, as they almost beat Georgetown, and the late John Thompson, which was incredible, going through Pete Carril, who I admire. You can't be at Princeton as a, you know, fan of sports and not admire what Pete Carril did. But Pete Carril was 25, 30 years, whatever, ahead of his time with positionless basketball, right? You hear it all the time right now, positionless basketball. You know, LeBron can play one, he can play the four, he can play anywhere. And the great players, Giannis, 1 through 5, they play anywhere. if you watch our team, there's a little bit of that positionless. I get the center might be a center or a guard. He's not going to play wide receiver for us. But you look at our skill spots on offense, you look at our defense, there's a little Pete Carril in there. And that's, you know, maybe a homage to his greatness and how we do things. And, you know, James Perry and Sean Gleason and Andy and Mike, we were all multi-sport athletes. We all believe in this positionless type thing. So it's not for us to see Steve Carlson playing tight end. He did it for us too. You know, John Lovett played everywhere. He played, you know, all six skill spots for us. So it's not unheard of for our guys to add that versatility that the NFL wants. And man, to see their highs and lows and follow it, this was a tough year to be young in the NFL because there's no preseason games and there's no reason for somebody to get their threes and fours ready because they're not preparing them for preseason. And with a short camp, with no OTAs, no offseason, they got to get ready for their opener. So it was really challenging for a guy like Carlson or Jesper, or, you know, Johnny and, you know, those guys, Kevin Davidson, to make it. And I think when it's all said and done and you get to week 16 in the NFL, you know, we're going to have five or six guys end up playing a lot of football.
Got Jesper Horsted right back where he started last year on the practice squad with the Bears. And then he played a role late in the season in Chicago. And then Caron Reed on the practice squad down in Jacksonville. You know, I mean, it's not just football. You look around Princeton Athletics, and I'm wondering, because I feel like a lot of teams on campus, this is a selling point. Like, you know, you can come to Princeton and you can play at the highest level of your professional sport. And we talked about the four guys in the NFL for you, you know, two players in the WNBA, Mike Ford hitting in the middle of the Yankees lineup, you know, professional women's soccer, two former Princeton hockey players in the NHL playoffs. Like, it's not just Princeton football. This is a Princeton Athletics thing. And I think we're seeing it more over the last 5 or 6 years where you can come here and it doesn't matter what sport it is. You know, you're not going to be under the radar at Princeton. Like, if you're good and you're winning here, you're going to get noticed by the top level.
Yeah, it's excellence, right? You know, there's a reason, you know, I had, you know, John Lovett and Mike Sowers were friends. They're the best at what they do. And Schreiber and Quinn Epperle. And, you know, I'm watching WNBA games and there's Bella Allery and Blake Dietrich. And, you know, who's the best women's water polo player in the world? It's Ashley Johnson. And the whole thing is excellence. You're going to get it in every area of your life at Princeton. There's track athletes at the highest level. There's field hockey players at the highest level. You know, our women's ice hockey team, or you know, you got people going to the Stanley Cup that play ice hockey on our men's team. The women's ice hockey stars are on, like, the Olympic teams. That you're going to walk into an eating club or a dining hall or a classroom, and when you meet the other athletes that you just saw in the training room, they're going to be playing professionally. They're going to be playing and reaching their dreams. And it's no different in football. And that's a credit to Molly. That's a credit to our performance team. That's a credit to the people that surround us and develop them. And, man, as a coach, you're surrounded by great head coaches in all these other sports, and you have amazing respect for what they do.
Our player guest this week is going to be Carson Bobo. He sort of burst onto the scene last year as a sophomore tight end, didn't play as a freshman, was on the scout team. Comes in last year as a sophomore, fourth on the team with 23 catches, playing alongside Graham Adamitis. And he's a guy who was, I guess, sort of a late bloomer in high school. Is that safe to say?
Yeah, a little bit. And even we got on his recruiting late. And, you know, I remember, you know, sitting watching him play basketball. It was a beautiful high school arena. And, you know, watching him move, and you're like, this guy not only has athleticism, but he just has that feel and that it factor. When, you know, I watched Spencer Weiss play basketball. He might not be the most athletic guy, but, man, this guy's a winner. This guy just makes plays. This guy leads the team. And that's what, when I was watching Carson play basketball, I'm like, that was his style. And then he gets here and he had to get in the weight room and get stronger. He was a multi-sport star in high school. So he needed some development. And we knew in the spring that he and Graham were going to complement each other incredibly well. And he was going to provide us and Kevin in our offense some weapons this way, because he just has a great feel. He has amazing hands, and his biggest improvement was as a blocker. He's really improved, and as he gets stronger, continues to really utilize our performance and nutrition team, this guy, the sky's the limit. And you just talked about NFL tight ends. We got to keep pushing him because, you know, he's very natural at it.
You talk about seeing Carson play basketball in high school. How often do you get a chance to see players play sports that aren't football, and what's the advantage of that? Why do you guys like doing that?
I love it because you get to see, we know they're good athletes. You know, watching Chuck DiBilio, the great Chuck DiBilio, probably the best freshman season of any running back, maybe in Ivy League history. And I go and watch him play, not to see his athleticism, see him as a leader, see him as a competitor. He's going up against a guy going to Villanova who's the, like, top 25 player in the country. Chuck wore him out. Chuck was in this guy's face. That guy left the game in the middle of the second half and never came back in because he didn't want any more of Chuck. And you just wanted to see this competitor. And that's what I get to see. And I get to see when maybe things aren't going great. What do? Are they knocking over the water bottles? Are they throwing their towel? Are they yelling at their teammates? Or are they uplifting? Are they leaders? And when I watch a Jalen Travis this year play hoops, all I saw was leadership. All I saw was, you know, when he came to the bench, he is standing up the whole time, cheering on his teammates. I'm not looking at him as a basketball player. I'm thinking, is this kid mature? Is he responsible? Is he a leader? Does he fit us? And I leave these games every single time, or wrestling matches or anything else, saying, man, I can't wait to coach Mike Zuli. I've never seen a guy with that type of intensity as a wrestler.
Coach, great catching up with you. Wishing it was talking about VMI and previewing this weekend's game. We're not going to have you on every week because I don't know enough about the Sixers to carry that conversation every 7 days. And you know, we're all relieved. We're disappointed, but we're relieved that you have removed yourself from consideration for the Sixers head coaching job officially.
Yeah, I think Warren should get it, or maybe Saxon. like you know, fortunately for you, you don't have Saxon and Warren to deal with on this. But, you know, those two guys are so much fun to text with during the season. And, man, we live and die. And Brian Flynn's an even bigger Sixers fan than me. And you go through this when you're a fan of a team and you remove yourself as a coach. You realize, like, WIP yesterday, I mean, Doug Peterson's the worst coach ever, trade Wentz, get rid of Ertz, do this, do that. You know, it's just, it's, you rather have that passion than have apathy, right? When I make a bad call, I'd rather be booed than people not care, right? And that's what you want. And Sixers fans, we're diehard. So we're going to get there. We got, you know, Ben and Joel and, you know, Tobias, and these guys are going to get themselves together, and I'm excited for next year.
It's Princeton head coach Bob Cerace. We'll be right back with Princeton junior tight end Carson Bobo. This is the First in Football podcast. From the Jersey Shore to the banks of the Hudson to the suburbs of the Garden State to the streets of New Jersey's greatest cities, join RWJ Barnabas Health and the New Jersey Devils for the virtual 2020 Running with the Devils 5K and Walk, honoring our healthcare heroes. For the avid runner or the treadmill participant, together we're all running with the Devils. October 1st through the 25th to benefit the RWJ Barnabas Emergency Relief Fund. Wherever your feet take you, help ensure your local hospital resources to support its most critical patients today and tomorrow. Visit rwjbh.org/runningwiththedevils to register. And let's get healthy together while being apart. Play action, Davidson looking to air it out, sideline, Bobo up and over the defense with a flag down, makes the catch inside the 10-yard line. I'm guessing this will be defensive pass interference, Carson Bobo climbing the ladder. Joined now by Carson Bobo, a junior tight end from Birmingham, Alabama, out of Oak Mountain High School, second team All-Ivy League last year, joining us on the First in Football podcast. Carson, welcome to the show. Thanks for taking some time early on in the semester. I know you got a taste of it last spring, but First off, what have your virtual classes been like? A little bit different than being on campus.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me, Cody. And yeah, it's definitely been a lot different. Like you said, I got a little bit used to it, you know, starting in March the last semester, being able to go online a little bit. That was a big learning curve initially, but going into this next semester, it's good to have that under my belt, and being able to have these classes and know what to expect has been very helpful for me going through so far. So
let's go back about a month and a half to July. When you heard the news that the fall season was canceled, what was your reaction at the time? And you know, has that reaction changed at all now that some schools aren't playing, some schools are, and I'm sure you've got, you know, friends from high school all around the country playing.
So initially, obviously, the whole team was devastated, and everybody, you know, you play football in college, you know, to actually play the season. So everybody was, you know, a little bit torn up about it. But pretty soon after, we all, you know, including the coaches, we wanted to, you know, move past the being sad about it and do what we can to, you know, take the next step and being able to, like, develop a plan of action and, you know, working out and field and technique, you know, things that we can do to get better for the next season, whether it be in the spring, whether it be in the fall. So
how have you been able to stay in shape? Obviously, you're not, you know, in pads and practice and you're not able to hit, but how have you been, you know, doing your best to try to stay in shape so that you're ready when you do get back on the field?
So, yeah, the strength coaches and the position coaches have been very, you know, in tune to what we've been doing. And, you know, I don't know if you know, but the gyms in New Jersey just opened back up. So you have to wear a mask when you go in and things like that. But that has been very helpful for us, you know, moving forward and being able to actually train with weights. And there we, you know, we like running on the field together and, you know, keeping in condition because, you know, you never know when we're going to get called back. So
are you actually in New Jersey now? Did you decide to stay close to campus?
I did decide to stay close to campus. I wanted to live with some of my best friends and you know, attack the school year with them. It'd be better to live with them rather than live at home.
I was going to say, I mean, does that help? You know, I know you're not on campus and you're not taking classes and you're not necessarily working out of the facilities, but you know, does that help having other Princeton students and other guys on the team there and, you know, knowing, okay, you know, you're not out on the field, but you are sort of all going through the same thing and you're not just holed up in your childhood bedroom?
Right. During all the last semester when we were forced to go home, I mean, the whole time I was, you know, working out alone, taking classes alone, and now being able to actually live with some, you know, some fellow Princeton football guys who have similar goals in mind and, you know, are also in the difficult classes and also want to, you know, make gains in the weight room and on the field. And having that, like being able to live near people that have the same goals has really been helpful for me personally.
I mean, you obviously elected to stay enrolled and not take the year off. What went into that decision?
So initially I, you know, everybody thought for a little bit about taking a year off. A lot of people considered it, but me personally, I wanted to be able to take the classes that I'm required to take with my fellow Orphy, like in my major. So I've developed a good relationship with some people that I have to take these classes with, and I knew that I'd be able to get some good work done if I'd stayed enrolled. And so if I took the year off, I would have, you know, had to reform relationships, like similar relationships, and it was better for me to stay enrolled.
Your major sort of leading into your internship this summer with Boysen down in Alabama. They manufacture exhaust systems for Mercedes-Benz. What was that experience like?
So it was extremely cool, actually. So I worked directly for he was the project manager of Boysen, and Aaron Ayers, he's a great guy, and he basically helped me. He helped teach me and, you know, guide me through what went into, you know, developing the projects and the, you know, the things that went into the improvement of efficiency throughout the whole plant. And so doing that for 8 weeks this summer was extremely helpful and, you know, very cool experience.
We'll go back to the classroom side and the academic side in a couple minutes. I want to talk football. Last year at Yankee Stadium, 8 catches, 69 yards, both career highs. I know you wanted to get a win in that game, but what's it like to perform to that level and have that kind of a day on a stage that size? A great crowd, nationally televised game, Major League Stadium, 2 undefeated teams. What was it like to not only take the field on that day, but perform well?
like you said, everybody wants to get a win in that situation, but I'm not going to discount the fact that that was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And, you know, I was very thankful taking the field. I was, you know, a little starstruck, but, you know, everybody practices for games like that in hopes of playing games like that. So I, you know, but just like the whole team, nobody was thinking too much of it. You know, you go out there and you just want to, you want to perform how you practice. And we, you know, we were a very, very talented team and we worked very hard. And so we were all very prepared going into that game, but it was definitely one of the coolest things I've done in my life.
Last season listed 6'5", 240 hitting the weight room. So I imagine that might've gone up a little bit. You certainly looked the part of a Division I tight end, but you know, reading some articles, that maybe wasn't always the case. Were you, safe to say you were a little bit of a late bloomer in high school?
Oh yeah, definitely. That was a big part of my recruiting process, is I was a very undersized tight end. And I think in high school I weighed 210 pounds, you know, being recruited, and I wasn't recruited till my senior year. And so by the time I was talking to these schools, I may have gotten to 215, but, you know, still very undersized for a Division I tight end. And so I didn't get as many looks as I had liked, as I had wanted initially, but I mean, Princeton gave me a chance, and they knew that their motto is recruit and develop. So, you know, you just got to hit the weight room once you get on campus. And yes, it was definitely undersized tight end coming out of high school.
What were some of the factors that made you ultimately decide to come to Princeton?
Obviously you can't discount the incredible education that you'll get if you come to Princeton. And that was definitely the deciding factor, because I was talking to Richmond for a little bit, other schools, and the thing that stood out most about Princeton, obviously, is that it's the number one institution in the country. And so obviously that played a big role in my decision, and I am very happy that I did come to Princeton, because it's helped me in so many ways so far, and I'm excited to see how it helps me in the future.
I know you're not necessarily the same player now that you were in middle school and high school. Growing up, who'd you model your game after? Like, when you're playing in the backyard with your friends, who were you out there pretending to be?
So, me being from Birmingham, Alabama, I was a big Alabama fan growing up my whole life. Like, I think every year I was alive, I went to at least one Alabama football game. And for many years of my life, I had season tickets and was, you know, always trying to model my game after. So early in my life, I was a quarterback. And so I was a big fan of A.J. McCarron, you know, John Parker Wilson, those types of guys. And then as I grew up a little bit, I moved to tight end, and, you know, some of my favorite players were like O.J. Howard, and I loved watching them play. And so that's basically how I started my love for football.
I know they moved the game out of there, you know, a long time ago. Did you ever get to an Iron Bowl when they played it at Legion Field or in Birmingham, or was that a little bit before you were at that age?
It was a little bit before my age, but I definitely have been to UAB plays at Legion Field. And so I've been there, but not when there was an Iron Bowl, no.
I was born and raised in New Jersey, lived here most of my life. Like, how do you describe college football in the South to people that aren't from the South? Like, you know, Alabama, you don't have professional teams. It's, you know, you're either Roll Tide or War Eagle. How would you kind of describe that to people that didn't grow up in that setting?
And with all due respect, I think that people don't quite understand. Because I mean, it's just a lot different, because not that people don't love football just as much in New Jersey, but with there being, you know, the Jets, the Giants up here and things like that, when all you have is college football, it's just treated a little bit different. But I definitely think that the love of football is still in New Jersey, considering there are way more teams and stuff like that. But it was definitely cool growing up in a spot where, you know, also Alabama being a very, very good football team growing up throughout most of my life. I mean, it was definitely a blessing.
You're from Birmingham, Alabama. What's something people don't know about Birmingham?
Something that people don't know about Birmingham. So Rickwood Field is the oldest baseball field in the nation. And that's right in the middle of Birmingham, Alabama. And I actually went to a baseball game at Rickwood Field when I was really young with my dad. So it was really cool being able to go that. I didn't really understand the magnitude of it when I actually went to the field, but now looking back at it, I can, you know, notice how incredible it actually is that I've been to a baseball game there.
Rickwood Southern League. They do the Rickwood Classic, what, 1910, I think. It's, I mean, it's like you're walking into, you know, the set of a movie. It's like your, you know, closest thing you can do to time travel. Present time. So Mike Willis, he's been your tight end coach. Now he takes over as your offensive coordinator. What's Coach Willis like to play for?
Coach Willis is an amazing coach to play for. He is very, very loving of his teammates. And that's one thing that I'll always remember about Coach Willis is that he, I've never met a coach along with Coach Trace, but I've never met a coach that personally loves his tight ends more than Coach Willis. And now that he's the OC, I've never met anybody that loves the whole offense more than Coach Willis. And it's definitely been great. He's given me a lot of chances to grow and develop and, you know, been a great mentor throughout all. Him going to Princeton has been very helpful too, because he's very understanding about, you know, the academic workload, and he's always there to give, like, you know, very much assistance and you know, refer me to people that I might need to be referred to. And so he's been a help in the, on the academic side and on the football side, obviously. So he's definitely a great coach to play for.
Carson, kind of bummed we don't get to see out on the field this fall, but glad to hear you're, you know, on campus working hard in the classroom and working hard to stay in shape, and hoping to see you out there sooner rather than later.
Yeah, the season will come. That's all we always say is the season's going to come. We just got to be ready, but I'm definitely excited to get back out there soon.
Great catching up with you, Carson.
Thanks, Cody.
Looking to buy or sell a home? Choose the Greater Princeton Area's real estate market leader, Callaway Henderson Sotheby's International Realty. Our expertise is local, our reach is global, and our remarkable agents produce unrivaled results. Stop by our offices in Princeton, Pennington, Montgomery, and Lambertville, or visit CallawayHenderson.com to search for homes, find an agent, and love where you live.
Love it. Good protection over the middle. Bullet pass, Horsted. Touchdown, Princeton. John Lovett firing it in there from 20 yards out, and the Tigers go back up by 2 scores. Our final guest this week is a 2-time Bushnell Cup winner, his Ivy League Player of the Year, and a 2-time Ivy League champion, and he was the quarterback of the undefeated 2018 team. This past Sunday, he made his NFL regular season debut for the Green Bay Packers in a 43-34 win over the Vikings. John Lovett, Green Bay Packers, I guess we'll call you a tight end. John, great to see you over Zoom. No fans in the stands in Minneapolis this weekend, but I can't imagine that dampen your excitement as you finally got to take the field for the first time in a regular season game after missing last year with an injury. What was Sunday like?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Cody. Sunday was awesome. It's been a dream of mine. And a goal I've been working to, honestly, since I've been a young kid. I started playing football at 6 years old, and like every other young kid, you want to go play in the NFL one day. So to be able to fight through injury last year and then kind of have some ups and downs, but to be able to be out there and playing week one was truly special.
Was there a moment where it hit you? I mean, like, was it any different? So you're running off the sideline, and you've played in preseason games, and you've played in – you know, big time college games, and you've been practicing for a couple of years, but like, did it hit you differently when you ran off the sideline for that first play, or was it just another football game?
Yeah, I think once you hit the field, it's just, I was telling my parents, it's just like anything else. From the time you're a young kid, football is football, same 11 guys on the field and same rules apply. But, you know, getting those pads on, getting ready in the locker room and running out of there, even though there was no fans to be in the stadium, was you know, definitely had some of those butterflies and was jacked up to be out there.
Walk us through last week for you. You're in camp with the Packers. There's no preseason games this year. You were released. You were added to the practice squad, and then before they played their first game, you were activated for week one. Walk us through last week.
Yeah, this business has a lot of highs and lows. You need to just keep a stay the course and keep a steady mindset. But yeah, you get released and then signed to practice squad, and then that whole week in practice, was running with the ones on all the special teams and getting some plays on offense, and things felt good, and just sort of waiting to get the okay. But later on in the week, I was on Saturday morning, I was told that you know, you're gonna be active for game one and get ready to roll. And, you know, obviously, dream come true.
Last year, preseason opener, you caught two passes before you suffered that season-ending shoulder injury and they placed you on IR. You're on the sideline, you're recovering from the injury, and meanwhile, the Chiefs are making a run to the Super Bowl, so you've kind of got a front row seat and you're behind the scenes in practice. I know you'd rather be out there on the field, but what was that experience like, just being around a team like that?
Yeah, like you said, I obviously would have loved to have been healthy and contributing on the field, but it was a special year. We had an amazing team, and to be in that meeting room every day, learning from Coach Reed, who's a future Hall of Fame coach, and for him to get his first Super Bowl ring, it was special. And the tight end room that I was in with Travis Kelce and learning under him that whole year, seeing how he worked as a professional was something that I didn't take for granted, and sort of was just chomping at the bit throughout that whole season to get my mind right and get my body right to come back and ready to go the next season.
Where does going through a Super Bowl parade rank as far as things you've experienced in your life?
Yeah, that's gotta be at the right at the top. It was Kansas, especially pre COVID. Kansas City was really getting down. That was a party that week, and it was fun and something I remember for the rest of my life.
So last year, last summer, you signed your first contract with the Kansas City Chiefs. What were your thoughts when you were placed on waivers a day later? The Green Bay Packers claim you, and you're packing up and moving to Green Bay.
Yeah, it's a roller coaster. I mean, you get cut, and then you sort of at a low and get claimed off waivers within 24 hours, and now I'm taking my Honda Accord up to Green Bay, driving 10 hours north, and you know, getting right to work. And I felt like really excited to get this opportunity from Green Bay. And then obviously all within a month, right? Then I get cut at cut dates, get signed to practice squad. And then 5 days later, I'm opening kickoff. I'm starting out there on special teams. So it's been a whirlwind, but you just got to keep your mindset, pedal to the metal and stay focused.
How did you navigate that mentally going into a year like this where, you know, you're a young guy, you're coming off an injury that forced you to miss your entire rookie season, and knowing you're not going to have any preseason games to show the staff what you can do? How do you navigate that mentally? And, I mean, you've obviously done a good job of keeping yourself in a position to make an impact, but yeah, this is a strange year to be a young, undrafted guy in the NFL. How do you navigate that?
Yeah, I just try to, you know, constantly remind myself that this is, you know, obviously there's uncertain times, but this is a blessing that I get to still be, you know, 24 years old playing the game I loved since I was a kid, and it's my ultimate passion. So I just go out there every day, whether it's treat every practice like it's a game, treat every meeting like it's a game. I'm just, you know, ready to go no matter what. So it wasn't too hard to navigate, but it is definitely uncertain times, and I was just doing what I needed to do for, and I'm going to continue to do what I need to do to just be ready when my number's called.
Let's go back a couple of years to your time at Princeton. You were the starting quarterback in 2018 for that 10-0 Ivy League champion team. But prior to that, you moved all around the field. Chad Kanoff was the man under center. I go back to, I think it was at Cornell in 2016, 7 touchdowns. You had 4 passing, 2 rushing, 1 receiving. Coach Sarace earlier in the podcast, and we were talking about some of the tight ends in the NFL and, you know, yourself and Steven Carlson and Seth DeValve and Jesper Horsted. You know, you talk about positionless basketball where you can move around the court. You talk about positionless football, and it seems like your skill set's kind of tailor-made for that. Has that been a conscious decision where you've been actively focusing on being versatile, or is that just something that's happened over time based on the situations you've been in?
Yeah, I think, you know, growing up, I played so many different sports, was always active outside, and just like to compete in anything. But obviously, I played quarterback throughout all high school, and then coming to Princeton, my mindset originally was obviously just, you know, I'm in the quarterback room, that's what I'm playing. But Coach Perry and then Coach Gleason as well, like, they just preach from the offensive standpoint, like, the best. anything I could do to get on the field. So that role sort of, I guess, started to carve itself out in college. You know, even as a freshman in college, in those JV games, going out there saying, you know, I'll go play wide receiver, I'll go play running back, like whatever I could do to just get on the field and show my skill set and show how much I love to compete and play football.
In the NFL now, you've, I imagine, had a very different college experience than a lot of the guys in the locker room with the Packers. Going back to your time at Princeton, you know, I mean, you don't look at it where, okay, it's the Ivy League, there's 10 games, you're not going to the playoffs. You know, there's four guys week one that are either on NFL rosters or practice squads, and you look up and down the Ivy League, and that's not uncommon. You know, different college experience than maybe playing in the Power Five, but how did Princeton prepare you for the NFL, where maybe some places wouldn't?
For sure. I think from a young age, obviously coming in as a freshman, an 18-year-old kid, you have to have great time management. Obviously, the academic load it's the number one school in the country, right? So you need to grow up fast as far as prioritizing your academics, get that taken care of to then allow yourself to focus on football as well. And like you said, you look down the Ivy League. I know it's not – you know, you're not in FBS and competing for a national championship, but you have guys from every single university, and we got a lot from Princeton, especially of late, you know, playing in the NFL on Sundays. And I just think that mindset and the hunger to be the best, you know, definitely shows itself in the Ivy League, just because of how demanding it is for both football and academics.
Busy time of year, obviously, for you. How much have you been able to get in touch and talk with guys like Steven Carlson and Jesper Horsted, two of those other NFL guys that you were teammates with here at Princeton?
Yeah, for sure. We have our little three-person group chat and just always texting each other throughout camp and throughout the season, just asking how everyone's doing and, you know, what the situation's looking like this year, this week, day-to-day, just always supporting each other and you know, rooting for each other.
Final question, your time at Princeton, is there one play that you look back at and it stands out? I mean, you won two Player of the Year awards, so there were a lot of plays that probably stand out, but, you know, if you have to pick one play to sort of sum up your Princeton career, what stands out?
Oof. I would have to say it was, you know, when we played Dartmouth at home, my fifth year. Obviously, both teams were 7-0, and it was, you know, that game had a lot of implications on who was going to win the championship, and we struggled on offense. We had a record-setting year, you know, scoring 50 points a game, but final score of that game was, I believe, 14-9, and it was that last drive, you know, sealing the deal with a touchdown run. I think that sort of just encapsulated the mindset of the team. The resilience we had as a group, and to be getting that ball across the end zone was special. I'll remember that forever.
I'm trying to remember the play. Is that the photo? I know there's one photo from Princeton Stadium your senior year where you're running with the ball in the air and the cast in the air. Is that the play?
I don't believe it was that play, just because
Dartmouth was a goal line.
Yeah, Dartmouth,
you got in, right?
It was like a spin move to get into the end zone, and I fell like that. That wasn't that. I fell on that play into the end zone, but I know what you're. I'm not sure what picture that was from, what game that was from.
10-0, a lot of great memories from that 2018 season. John Lovett, Green Bay Packers tight end. John, appreciate you taking some time on a day off. Congratulations again on the NFL debut, and looking forward to seeing how the year goes and how your career takes off.
Thanks, Cody. I appreciate it. Stay well.
You've been listening to the First in Football podcast, an inside look at Princeton Tigers football, and is a production of Learfield, IMG College.